Chapter 4. The Valley of Fear.
When McMurdo woke up the next morning, his head ached and his arm was very painful from the mark. Because he had his own illegal way of making money, he did not always go to work, and this morning was one of those times. He sat and read the paper. There was an article about last night's events. "Editor seriously injured at the Herald office," was the headline. McMurdo put down the newspaper. The landlady brought him a note. It read,
"I want to speak to you. Meet me on Miller Hill. I have something important to tell you."
The note was not signed. McMurdo was surprised, but decided to go. When he got to the hill, Brother Morris was waiting for him.
"I wanted to ask you something, but please don't tell Boss McGinty. When you joined the Free Men's Society, did you think that it would lead you to a life of crime?"
he asked.
"If you call it crime,"
said McMurdo,
"some call it war."
"Of course it's crime,"
cried Morris.
"When I arrived here, I wanted to do the best for myself and my family. But then I was forced to join the lodge in order to carry out a murder. I went, but I couldn't do it. But it made me a criminal. I was a good Catholic, but now the priest will no longer speak to me. I see you going the same way. Can't we do anything to stop it?"
"What are you going to do?"
asked McMurdo.
"I think you're making too much of this."
"Too much? Wait until you've been here longer. Then you'll understand how it is. There's a cloud over this valley, a cloud of murder. It's the Valley of Fear, the Valley of Death. These people are terrified from morning until night. Wait and you'll see."
"I'll tell you when I've seen more. You're not the man for this place, that's clear. Why don't you sell your business and leave? What you have said is safe with me. I'm going now."
"Just one thing. Perhaps someone has seen us together. McGinty will want to know what we're talking about. Tell him that I offered you a job in my shop."
"Good thinking. And I refused your offer. Goodbye, Brother Morris."
The same afternoon, McGinty came to McMurdo's house and asked why he had been with Morris. McMurdo told him the story.
"Did Morris say anything against the lodge?"
asked McGinty. McMurdo told him that he had not. Just as McGinty was about to leave, the door crashed open and Captain Marvin of the police walked in with two other policemen.
"You're coming with me, McMurdo. Take his gun,"
said Marvin.
"What have I done?"
asked McMurdo.
"You can't do this,"
said McGinty.
"You stay out of this, counselor,"
said the policeman. Then he turned to McMurdo.
"You were involved in the beating of Mr. Stanger at the Herald office last night."
"Well, he can't have been,"
said McGinty.
"This man was at my bar all night playing cards with me."
"Well, we'll see about that in court,"
replied Marvin.
"Come on, you're coming with me."
But the freeman had power even over the courts. The next morning in court, the witnesses were uncertain as to the identity of the men who had attacked Mr. Stanger. Stanger himself said that he was so taken by surprise that he did not see his attackers. McMurdo was released. The court was full of brothers who cheered and applauded, but there were others there who looked less happy. One man shouted as they went out,
"You murderers! We'll catch you yet!"
McMurdo's arrest made him even more popular in Vermissa. Only Ted Baldwin and a few other members of the lodge did not like him. But McMurdo also lost favour with another person far more important to him, Etty. Her father wanted nothing to do with him. Etty was very much in love with McMurdo, but her common sense told her that it was better not to marry a criminal. She decided to go and see him one last time, to try to get him away from the evil influence of the lodge.
"But you don't know what you're asking me. Do you think the lodge will let a man go free, knowing all its secrets?"
"But I've thought of that. Father has some money saved up, and he is ready to leave this place. Let's go together to New York or Philadelphia."
"But they have lodges there, too. We can't get away that easily,"
said McMurdo.
"Well, to England or Sweden, or anywhere to get away from this valley of fear.
Look, Eddie, the best I can say is that in 6 months or so, I'll find a way so that we can leave here with no problems.
Really? 6 months?
Eddie was happy.
Is that a promise?
I promise,
said McMurdo. Life in the valley continued as before. The Scourers murdered people and terrorized the district. McMurdo was given a job of his own to do. He had to blow up the house of a man named Chester Wilcox. There was no other way of doing it except at night, when his wife and two small children were also in the house. McMurdo set the explosives, and the house blew up. However, someone had told Wilcox that he was in danger, and the night before the explosion, he and his family moved to a safe place. But in general, life had never seemed so hopeless and dark in the Valley of Fear. One Saturday evening in May, Brother Morris came to see McMurdo again.
I must speak to you,
he said.
I spoke to you once before, and you didn't tell McGinty, so I know I can trust you. I have something to tell you.
The man was white and shaking. McMurdo gave him some whiskey and waited.
There's a detective after us,
he said.
You've heard of Pinkertons? When they send a man after you, they don't stop until they have what they want. The lodge will be finished.
We must kill him,
said McMurdo at once.
Who is he? Where is he? How do you know about him? Tell me the facts.
Morris answered all McMurdo's questions.
His name is Bertie Edwards, but here he's using Steve Wilson as his name. He's staying in Hobson's Patch. I know, because I have a friend who works for the telegraph service. He told me about him. Those big corporations have hired Pinkerton's best man.
Leave this to me,
said McMurdo.
Don't worry.
McMurdo went to the Shafters. He told Etty the news and asked her if she was willing to go with him when the time came to leave.
Day or night, Jack, I'll be ready when you come for me,
she said.